Hello and welcome to another episode of the Two Bros Podcast. We are Two Bros. This is the Two Bros Podcast. Welcome, welcome. Well, I come to you from... I'm back home, obviously. But it's been a while. I'm just looking up, when was the last episode I uploaded? 16th of March. Wow. That was talking about my deep sea diving experience. Episode number 95. But this item which I'm going to talk about now, also fair warning, I'm a little sick, I'm a little under the weather, so just bear with me. There'll be a lot of it's not pretty, but today I feel like I'm a lot better, but and I feel like talking about this. I've been feeling about talking about this for a very long time, but again, I've just been under the weather, like I said. But today is the day that we talk about Manchester United and visiting their stadium. And let me give you a little bit of a backstory. I wasn't into football. This goes way back. I think I was, what year was it? 2003, I think 2002, 2003. Three or four season, yeah. My brother was in college engineering. I think he was in first year when I was in 10th, yeah. And he had come back for a semester break, and this was in Srinagar. We were in the Cant, obviously. And Big Brother being Big Brother started dominating the TV remote. Like, I used to watch things like Transformers and Pokemon and Whose Line Is It Anyway? Remember that show? How good was it? And he started dominating the remote, and then he would just put on football on the weekends, and I could not for the life of me, like, take it back and do anything. But he would just not relinquish the remote, and I had to sit there and watch because there's nothing else to do. And then he left. He went back to college, and then there was nothing else to watch on TV, I think, a couple of weekends, I don't know what. And then I said, okay, might as well see what this football is about. And then I saw Manchester United play. I think those days, probably Beckham had left by then. I'm not sure, because I don't remember seeing Beckham play for United. Ruud van Nistelrooy used to lead, Scholes, Giggs, Roy Keane, Michael Silvestre. And I think it was Tim Howard in goal way back. So I watched them play, and I liked the the never say die attitude they had, the aggression with which they played. You know, win at all costs. It doesn't have to be pretty football. Just it's the results that matter. Doesn't matter you give away possession. Just try, and relentless assault on the opponents. And I think we had a friend there, he used to support Liverpool quite openly, and there was no other football fan back then. So I said, okay, let me see what Liverpool are all about. But obviously back then they were going through a slump, they were not winning anything. Yes, they had the legacy and the European whatever. But for me, United, it stuck out. And I was like, yeah, this has to be my club. Which is funny, because back then, brother supported Barcelona, I think, if I remember. And then eventually switched to Arsenal. But something about United stuck with me. And it stayed with me all these years. And it's not gone away. Because, yes, they don't play pretty football. But they're very, very result-oriented. Because at the end of the season, that's what matters. Winning trophies. And it was that man, Sir Alex Ferguson, that drilled that mentality into these players. And, it was just... that's what stayed with me. And then soon after, they signed Wayne Rooney, and he was a revelation, and just to watch him play, the aggression he had on the field, and he was just like this pissed off guy, and he wanted to score all the time and no nonsense. Then of course they signed Ronaldo, and I saw him come off like being a player who was a sub to become a first team player, blossom under United and become the superstar, win the Ballon d'Or, all these things. It was fantastic to watch him grow, and that team was just the pinnacle of winning. And they would just win. You're expected to win everything every time the season starts. Imagine that feeling now. Yeah, because it's been a while. So anyway, my love affair with United continued. And, there's this YouTube channel. It's called, they used to be called Full Time Devils. Now they're called Stretford Paddock. One of the guys on that show said something like, you don't know what it's like to support Manchester United in Manchester, the amount of abuse you get, and you see people on the street and people know you support United, they come at you. If you lose a game, people come and it disturbs you, this and that. But I would disagree with that guy, because I would say that's prevalent everywhere. case in point, like when we were in college, everybody knew who supports what club, and you know, used to just get in each other's faces. However, there was this huge group of people who didn't watch football, but you just used to diss on United fans for some reason. So it's a whole week. Like, if you lose to somebody, like, okay, fine, you have. We used to have like these freak losses under Sir Alex Ferguson as well. You lose to Blackburn Rovers, and Blackburn Rovers of 2007-08 were whatever. They were crap. But they would just walk up to you, and if you're just passing them in the hall, they'd be like, "Ah, man, you sucks." And I'm like, "You don't even watch football. What's your deal?" But yeah, the level of abuse that United players used to get was just, it was beyond anything else. No other, you know, club supporters used to get this level of abuse, not even Chelsea fans. And yeah, they're famously crap. But anyway, and I remember this one case where it was, I think we were playing Tottenham and we were like 3-0 down at halftime. And we had this TV room in our college and everybody used to just accumulate there for the weekend games. And there were chants going on about Man U sucks, and we were all like United fans, like all 5-6 of us were sitting in a group together, and they were just directing all kinds of abuse at us, laughing, giggling and whatever. And that was the game where we won 5-3 in the end. Ronaldo turned up and everybody turned up and they destroyed Spurs. What a feeling that was, to give it back to them on their faces. It was beautiful to watch. But well, that's where it was. The thought of visiting United came much later. It was after I had obviously secured a job. I was sailing. I'd saved up some money. And then you had seen some of your friends, you know, end up at Old Trafford. And you think, huh, you know, this is something that can be done. But I chalk it down to sheer laziness that I didn't. I had a lot of vacation days. I just didn't go anywhere. It was just not what I did. Yeah. And for the longest time, I was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be at Old Trafford at some point in my life. It has to happen. There's no other way, because it's been such a big part of me, you know. Friends of mine who have known me, they know, okay, Arden Sharma, Manchester United. It's just what he does. That's all he talks about. My stories are full of United stuff. It is what it is. You know, you can't help it. And forget that. Even on dating apps, like Hinge will ask you what is one of your like bucket list items or one place you want to visit. And it has been Old Trafford, Manchester United for the longest time, right? And yeah, so it was on the pipeline for a very long time. And funnily enough, like after I went there, a friend showed me a screenshot from 12 years ago where she had shifted to England, I think, and she was at Old Trafford, and she was watching, and she shared a picture, and that picture had Wayne Rooney playing. Like, imagine that. Like, she saw Wayne Rooney play live. And in that chat, I had said, someday I'm going to be there. And that was 12 years ago. So apparently I manifested this thing. But yeah, and I felt like this is the opportune moment, and this is the year to go and do it. And sadly, if I'd gone earlier this year, I would have seen Ronaldo play, but Ronaldo left. Yeah, well, it is what it is. No regrets, however. So here's what happened. I saw this ad while I was watching some random match on TV about this organization called Dream Set Go. They said they offer match passes and VIP experiences for anything. So I, while the match is playing, I logged into their website. And they were offering tickets for Manchester United versus Chelsea at Old Trafford on the 22nd of April. I said, that's something I should be going for. And this was before I went on my bike trip, but I was all pumped to get out there and, you know, experience everything. I'd booked my diving course. I'd planned my bike route-ish. And I said, this is the next thing that I need to do. I will come back by the time it's 22nd of April, I would have come back from my bike trip, and it would give me enough time to go ahead. Straight away, I got in touch with Dream Set Go, figured out what the prices are, what I need to spend on, what they're going to spend on, this and that, got everything cleared out. And I think it was that very night that I went on the UK immigration website and applied for a visa. And I think it was 3 or 4 days later that I went and submitted my passport to the embassy, or not the embassy, this VPS counter on Shivaji Nagar metro station's first basement. That's where it happens. You have to submit all your documents and everything. So I did that. And there was a big question mark if I'll get my passport in time before I leave for my bike trip, because I had to. I basically pushed back my bike trip because I needed my passport back. And So there were a couple of options. You have a 6-month visa, you have a 2-year visa, you have a 5-year visa for tourists, of course. And I opted for a 2-year visa because of the aid of war. So you don't know how things are going to escalate sometimes. You know, they just cancel flights and, you know, they ground whatever. You can't fly over certain airspaces. I don't know what. The other thing was, in case you have a coronavirus uprising again and everything shuts down again, then you're stuck. Your visa expires. You haven't done anything about it. And it just gives you more flexibility in life, basically. So I opted for a 2-year visa, which costed, I think, about 40,000 rupees. Just for the visa, multiple entry, so you can go whenever, whatever. And maximum duration of stay per visit is 180 days, which is a lot. It's not bad, yeah. So I got the visa done. Then I got in touch with DreamsetGo. In the meantime, I had to purchase the package from DreamsetGo, which was an extra, I think it was 50-ish thousand plus GST, whatever. That included a match day VIP experience, signed shirt, match day ticket, this and that, whatever. So I really didn't want the hospitality package, because who cares about all that stuff? You know, you're at a game, who cares about if you're getting served nachos or shrimp cocktails or whatever? Nobody cares. I swapped that for a museum tour instead, which is, I think, in hindsight, a very good decision that I made. So, yeah. And once everything was in place, passport came back, visa was done. But there was a complication. United kept qualifying for the FA Cup. They beat Brighton on penalties. Yeah, was it Brighton? I think it was Brighton, yeah. So then the match on the 22nd had to be postponed, and that was the Chelsea game. Then I didn't know what to do. I had to basically reschedule my flights, and then I got in touch again with DreamsetGo. By the way, DreamsetGo, very reliable people. They're always available, and you know, you can WhatsApp. I had WhatsApp chats with a guy called Eddie, bless him, good guy. You know, helped me out a lot in anything, any case I had, any questions I had. He's always there, very good guy. So they took a few days to figure out what do we do next. They basically changed my ticket to a home game against Aston Villa. Yeah, because the Chelsea game was now is going to get played now on the 22nd of May. So that's a month later. So I figured, yeah, okay, fine, I'll watch Aston Villa. And then Aston Villa were, in fact, doing well. I think they're seventh now in the league as we speak. But, yeah, the trouble, what happened was my museum tour dates and my match day dates were not consecutive days. So that was a problem. I had to figure it out because I was landing in London. Manchester is a bit further away. And there's not much to do in Manchester. You can't do much. And then you miss out on days. I just didn't want to like stay in a hotel and just park myself because there's so much to see in London. So here's what I did. I rescheduled my tickets. Apparently, if you reschedule international tickets within a week of flying, then it's free. Yeah, there's no problem. So you can do that. Again, provided you buy those flexible tickets. If you buy concrete things, then it's not going to happen. So luckily, I had the right tickets. Changed my dates and off I went. It was a weird thing. I'm not going to talk much about this, but it was a weird time that I was in because I'd just come off the back of an epic 9,000 kilometer drive across India where I'd stayed at 30 cities and this amazing sights and sounds that I'd seen. And I was off to Britain, our former colonizers, and I was reading Freedom at Midnight, which talks about the partition and the last few encounters we had with the Brits. It's a very confusing time where I was at, you know, and I could see the allure of London, but then I could see them build statues and praising our former oppressors like Clive and Churchill and stuff. So I was very conflicted. Yes, it's a beautiful city, but then you don't understand just how small these cities are. Like I did a 15 kilometer loop of all of London and I had seen all the sights and that was it. And try imagine walking for 15 kilometers in Delhi. What do you cover? You cover nothing in 15 kilometers. Nothing. So yeah. Anyway, forget that. So I landed in London on 26th evening, stayed in a nice hotel near Gatwick Airport. The next day, by the way, the trains, once you understand the trains in London, in England, they're very easy to follow. I don't know why they still rely on physical tickets. They've not shifted to QR codes yet. It still feels very outdated to me, honestly. And they're still working with currency and change and you're carrying coins everywhere. I don't know why they've not shifted to QR codes. Like UPI in India is such a blessing, man. Like I have 10 rupees in my wallet and I've not withdrawn cash for the longest time. I don't know why they've not shifted to that system there. Just, I don't know, they're probably set in their ways because half of India has descended there. I don't know why that technology hasn't reached them. It's very strange to me. Anyway, you got to carry all these physical tickets everywhere you go. Had a bit of an issue with the cab apps there. The Uber England app would not accept my card, but I had to get another app. It was called Bolt, which worked very well, by the way. So if you're in UK, you need cabs anywhere, any city, London, Manchester, wherever, get Bolt. Bolt works very well, even if you have an Indian debit card with an international thing on it. So the next day was my museum tour. So I got on a train, which I'd already booked. And again, it's all on the website. Luckily, I'd booked everything. It's called the Avanti West Coast train, which connects London, Houston, and Manchester, Piccadilly. This is another thing. You need to be careful of what station your thing comes off from. So I had booked it from London King's Cross because I knew King's Cross. Everybody knows King's Cross. But how did they plan my ticket? They said from London King's Cross, take the subway to London Euston, get out at London Euston. Was it the subway or did they say walk? One of them. Get off at London Euston and then take a train to Manchester Piccadilly. It's not like in Delhi where you pick the station and then you pick the destination and they say, okay, this goes from here to there and that's it. They don't predict that you'll have to walk and they don't tell you, okay, walk this much and then you'll get to the actual station. They should just say that it's going to take off from Euston and I'll plan accordingly. Never mind. Took the train to Manchester that morning and what a beautiful British countryside. It was just amazing. Fields and fields, endless fields. And beautiful roads, and I was just thinking, if I had my bike here, if this was a bike trip between London and Manchester, it would have been flawless, it would have been epic. Weather was good, it was a bit chilly, and it was a bit windy as well, typical London weather. But then I got to Manchester, took a cab, because it was a bit further away. Manchester Piccadilly is still some distance from where Old Trafford is. And then I got chatty with this Pakistani man who was a cabbie, good guy. And then we got chatting about how life is as immigrants and whatever. Apparently, it's quite difficult even after driving 14 cabs for 14 years in Manchester. Man can barely save anything. The government takes a lot of taxes, I guess. That's what his words, not mine. I'm just a messenger here. But yeah, finally got the first sight of the stadium and it's unreal. You've experienced this, right? You've seen things on Instagram or on other people or on TV. You've seen the structure multiple times over the years. For me, it had been 20 years that I'd seen the stadium from the outside. But when you see it in person, when it just the scene unfurls in front of your eyes and you see it for the first time, it's just so unreal. It's amazing. And I'd gotten there, not a lot of people outside, a bunch of people taking pictures with the trinity of United heroes, George Best, Bobby Charlton, and Dennis Law. And then I turned around a big Manchester United sign, and I've seen this so many times, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm here. Yeah, but I was early, as always, I was early. And I walked around a bit. And then I was like, I went to the superstore, the megastore, United Megastore. I was like, okay, I didn't want to buy anything. But for the life of me, I can't understand why you don't get United goalkeeper's jerseys anywhere else. I don't know why. I looked at all the stores in India. There was a dedicated Manchester United store in Delhi at some point. I think it was in CP. They didn't have a goalkeeper's jersey. I don't know why. Not a De Gea jersey, a goalkeeper's jersey, goalkeeper's kit. But luckily at the superstore, I found it. And I picked it up. Like, this I want, because this I can't get anywhere else. Picked that up, and then I picked a nice United coffee mug, because, of course, you know, it feels good. So I picked those two up, and then I paid with my debit card, which is a Manchester United debit card, and they were like, there was a bit of a surprise, but anyway. So I picked those up, and I was still walking around. I'm like, let me see what, when can I get in? So I went to the people and I showed them my booking and they said, okay, you know what? Your tour starts in like 2 hours, but you have a lot of time. You can enter the museum. Just look around. It's 3 stories of memorabilia. So take your time, walk around and just be at the spot at 3:30 and then we'll take you around. I was like, okay, sorted. And then it starts from the top and then you walk your way down. And it starts with one of the first things you see is the trophy room. And boy, oh boy, it's a lot of trophies. And that's when you realize just how successful a club this is. And in the center of the room, they had placed the most recent trophy we had won, which is this year's Carabao Cup, or formerly known as Carling Cup, or whatever cup it's called these days, had been called in the past. Nice glass case, lit up from all directions, just looked beautiful. Could have been, I probably would have wished for a bigger trophy, but of course it's the history we've had in the last 10 years, I'll take anything at this point. You turn left and you have the big European trophies, the two Champions League titles and the Europa League title in the big. I know we have won three, but the one which was won in the treble is located somewhere else with the other treble trophies. The other three are located all together. And then there's a dedicated section for the Munich air disaster. And at this point, I'm a giddy man. Like, I'm seeing things and I'm barely registering any of it. And I had to tell myself, okay, Arjun, calm down. Take it all in. Just breathe. It's all happening. And then they have a timeline of United, how it started as Newton Heath FC, how the club went into bankruptcy. Somebody funded United and then changed the name and then kept it alive. And then this happened and this happened and this happened. Then the Munich air disaster. Of course, there's a whole room dedicated to the Munich air disaster and how United bounced back from that, the Busby Babes and all of that. Then over the years, you start working your way down and there's all kinds of memorabilia, different shirts, different... You know how clubs, when it's a European tournament, they exchange these... I don't know what they call it. I'm going to call it like these little flags. They exchange, the captains exchange before the coin toss. All of that. They had all kinds of memorabilia, different kits, things dedicated... handed over to the club by former players as memorabilia. And it's all on display. It's just fascinating. So anyway, 5:30 rolled in and I came to the dedicated spot and I was sitting and I was sticking it all in and then the group assembled and then they said, okay, we're going to give you these monitors where it's a little device, just basically the size of a former Palm Pilot, if you remember what size they were. And then they say, okay, this is the way we go. So you leave, you exit the doors, you walk a flight of stairs and then you enter the stadium from the Sir Alex Ferguson stand. And then that's the first time you see it. And my first thoughts were, it's a bit smaller than I'd imagined. Yeah, it's weird, man. Like you see it on TV, it looks like this big sprawling bit. But then when you see it, it fits your vision, your field of vision, at least from where you enter. It fits, the whole length of the pitch. So you're like, okay, it looks a bit smaller because on TV, the camera like pans left and pans right. So you think it's a lot bigger. I don't know. It's probably an illusion. But yeah, I saw the stadium for the first time entering from Sir Alex Ferguson stand. Oh boy, it was such a feeling. I think there were 30 of us in our group and everybody got their cameras out just clicking away. Then the tour guide, bless him, a guy named Paul, I think Paul was his name. Yeah, he showed us around, very polite gentleman, answered all our questions. And funny as well, like he said, if there are any Arsenal, Liverpool fans here, they can find themselves, they can walk towards the exit right now. And you're like, nah, all kinds of fans are welcome, it's all good. We'll accept anyone's money, it's all good. No, he didn't say that. Good guy. Then he said, this is where we are, this is where we will go, this is what we will see, this is the best spot for taking pictures. The only thing you can't do is... just bumped my mic there. Only thing you can't do is smoke or video call someone. You can make videos, but you can't video call someone while you're taking the tour. And you can't walk on the pitch. You'll be pitch side, but you can't walk on the pitch. That's the only rule. And they say, please don't do this, otherwise we'll have security escort you out. And whatever, you might just get banned for life. I don't know what. So I said, fine. So all 30 of us, and people had come from all over the place. Like I was from India, there was a guy from Chile, there were some Frenchmen there. A family had come from Malaysia, there was an Indian dude. I don't know if he was a local or came from India, I don't know, I couldn't tell. But yeah, all of us, we were just like starstruck, man. I can't even, So then we went to the players' changing room. Again, we exited the stadium and we're walking under the stadium, under the bleachers basically. So went to the players' changing room. Came out from the other side, went to where the away fans sit, and that's the corner from where you see the Stretford End and Sir Alex Ferguson stand. It's just what a view that is, and you can just take amazing pictures there. Further up, other confectionery stands. Then you enter what was the former tunnel for the players to enter the stadium for a match. After that, you go to the actual tunnel. And this is interesting. They split us into like two groups, like away and home teams, whatever. And they played an audio from a former recording, which was like a match against Liverpool. And we walked out like we were the players. And they played the noise of the crowd from that day. And it was such a surreal feeling, like doing the same walk that the players do. And they walk out of the pitch before a match. Oh, man, it was something else. Then, of course, we went pitch side. Went to the players where, you know, the area where the players, the home team and the away team sit, where the manager sits. And they said, Sir Alex, you should sit on this side. Now Ten Hag has switched it because it's closer to the Stretford end. And then he can talk to the players. And this box gives more of a view from, you know, both sides of the pitch. And the other one's only restricted to one side. So he had some ideas. That's why Ten Hag has shifted his location of the where the home team sits. And eventually, after like an hour and a half, I think it takes 90 minutes, they leave you into the megastore again, where you can buy memorabilia. Obviously, you're pumping high on, nostalgia that you've just witnessed all of this. And good thing I'd already made my trip, otherwise I would have bought everything of everything. I need United socks. Nah, I didn't do any of that. So, yeah. From there, I had to go back to London. That was the plan. Because I didn't want to spend 2 days in Manchester. There's nothing to do, nothing to see here, see there much. So, because the match was on 30th and this is still 27th. So I took a late train. I think my train was at 6:30, 7-ish. And I got to London by 9:20. And it's funny because United were playing Spurs in London that night. And I think we drew with them. I think Harry Kane got a late goal. I think it was a 1-1 draw or a 2-2 draw. I can't remember. Yeah. Went to my hotel, which was a very odd hotel. It was well located, Strand Continental. It turned out to be more of a hostel, which it was a bit of a surprise. I picked a single room. I'd paid for a single room, close to 100 and something pounds a night without an attached bath. And it's essentially just like a hostel room. And there's nothing. There's a bed, there's a chair, there's a kettle, and there's a closet. And that's about it. And then I went straight down, like, what's going on? You're like, no, this is what it is. Single room means essentially you're not sharing with anyone, but the whole floor shares the restroom. And I'm like, what is that? Why is this a thing? Why are European hotels so crap? What is up with that? There's crazy prices, but nothing. There's nothing in it. No breakfast. What? Anyway, so, I mean, it was late at night. I was tired. I'd walked a lot that day, so I, like, chuck it. And then later at night that I realized the radiator isn't working. Yeah. And I get cold. I get cold a lot. So that was a problem. Anyway, I sustained myself that night. And funnily enough, like, in that hotel on the first floor was something called the India Club, where, I don't know, locals, Indian locals, live there, visit there, whatever, they all come together and they chit-chat. It's a club, basically. It's whatever. So they eat and they drink and they talk in Hindi. And, you know, it just felt like I was in Punjab or some club in Gurgaon, whatever. Just exactly the same noises and the music and the whatever. I was too tired. I didn't want to, like, go there. So I just crashed. That was it. So that was 27th. Yes. 28th was when I walked around London. The whole lap started at... So the location of this hotel is very good. Strand Continental, it's called, but the hotel is garbage. Never mind. So it was just, let's say, a kilometer and a half from Buckingham Palace. And if you walk the other side, it's just a kilometer from the London Eye. So it's well located. And it's in the middle of the theater district. Like, there were shows happening all over the place. Like, there's Mamma Mia playing, Back to the Future, the musical... Frozen, the musical, there's theaters everywhere, right next to the Waldorf Hilton as well. So the location was very good. I think probably that's why it was too expensive. And it was crap. And they got away with it, I guess. I think that's what people pay for. So I started my walk, hit Trafalgar Square, went to Buckingham Palace, and all of this was getting decorated for the coronation, which was on the 6th of May. And still in the process. A lot of people. And I could tell they've come from all corners of the world. Hit Buckingham Palace, turned around, hit Hyde Park, I think it's called. Turned back, 10 Downing Street, Tower, not the Tower Bridge. What bridge is that called where the Big Ben is? Some bridge. And then you walk across and then you take that picture. You know that picture, right? Big Ben, Bridge, Thames, all of that. Parliament Building. Yeah, that picture. I took that. Then I did something called the Queen's Walk. And I don't know why. That day is when I developed this niggle in my right knee. I don't know why. It still hurts for some reason. I think I walked too much and I was not landing properly. And I didn't have the right shoes with me. Anyway, Queen's Walk all the way across. Beautiful riverside properties. Very, very interesting. And then they had this battleship in the middle of the Thames anchored. It's a museum now. I didn't want to go there. London Eye had a huge line. Obviously, I hadn't paid in advance. Carried on all the way till Tower Bridge, got across, took that picture, you know, the Tower Bridge picture. Yeah, everybody does that. Hit Tower of London, turned back, went back to the hotel. I think it was still 6:30 when I got there. Then by some freak miracle, I had a match on Bumble with a local Indian, not a local, I don't know, yeah, probably she lives in London, so yeah, like an Indian girl, but she works in London, but not a permanent resident yet. She'd completed 1 year. So we went out, we talked, we had pizza, we had some drinks, we talked, and then I roughed off at a hotel. It was a pleasant evening. But by the end of it, I had walked, I think, 34,000 kilometers. 34,000 steps. 24 kilometers. And that was a night when I fell sick. I think I was walking back home around noon, passing Waterloo Bridge. It was windy, it was cold, and I had been outside all evening. That's when the cold set in. And I entered my hotel room around midnight, and the radiator was still not on. Went on to the reception, there was nobody there. I couldn't find anybody. They just shut shop and just, yeah, gone. So I was like, fine, I guess I'll have to endure, because I was really tired that day. So, am I putting in too much details? It's only 30 minutes, I've not entered the stadium yet. Anyway, it is what it is. So yeah, I crashed and then I fell sick. And then I woke up at 3 and it was all blocked. My nose, my head, it was just gone. I just knew what it is, and I obviously couldn't help it. Started taking a lot of hot teas, took a hot shower, which was also a bad idea because my room was freezing. The next day I had a train to Manchester, and that was a really difficult train because that was Saturday and the trains were full. And I was really sick. And for some reason, normally the train to Manchester takes about 2 hours. This was a longer train with more stops. This one took almost 3 hours. And by the time I got to Manchester, I was dying. I was really dying. Got to Piccadilly, took a cab to the hotel and just parked myself. Then I just immediately threw myself into the hot showers and tried to like get better. This place was a little bit better. They had good heating in the room. But I don't know why. Somehow these radiators just don't do it for me. They just don't. And they just randomly cut off and then you wake up and it's cold. And you're like, what happened? Then you just turn the knob a little bit left and right and then it comes on again. I'm like, I don't know what this is about. Very strange. I was a little bit better. This is 29th. And I didn't do anything that day. Like today, I'm just going to take care of myself because I have to be fit for tomorrow because tomorrow is the game. Game was at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on the 30th, got better, a little bit better, got dressed, went to the stadium a bit early and the crowds had already descended. People selling scarves outside, a lot of people. And I kind of missed my entry point, so I did a whole lap around the stadium. And you reach a point where they've sort of cordoned off an area where the players get off the buses and they enter the stadium. So I'd missed all of Manchester United players. But the Aston Villa bus had just come out. So I saw Tyrone Mings and Ollie Watkins right in front of me. They entered, and then after the whole team and the coaching staff had entered, they removed these barricades, and then you can do a whole lap around the stadium. So I did a whole lap, went through the tunnel of Munich, came out on the other side, and turns out my entrance, I think it was E35, E36, was right in front, right next to the superstore, the megastore. Had a QR code printed out, which Eddie had sent me on WhatsApp. Printed that out and showed the QR code, got an entrance. They frisk you, obviously, because of football hooliganism. And then I was let in. My seat was on the second tier of the east stand, just a little bit askew off where the goal is. So I wasn't exactly behind the goal, just a little bit on the right from where I was watching. It was a good view, it was a good seat. And so I sat down. I was very early. I didn't want to like walk around. I was still nursing my cold. And fans slowly trickling in, obviously. And turns out that that very afternoon, I should say, there was a big, big Glazer, anti-Glazer protest happening outside. I had no idea. I just walked in. Again, very organized and very peaceful. Nothing went askew, but a lot of big, big anti-Glazer protest. So I entered my, found my seat, sat down, and then it's windy in the stadium and there's a draft, and I'm just like, okay, I'm probably going to fall sick again. But anyway, I'm looking at my phone and suddenly there's a big applause from one corner of the stadium. I'm like, what happened? What's going on? Then I look into the distance and in comes David De Gea, and I'm like, oh my God, it's David De Gea. And the other keepers and the keeping staff come and they like start doing drills and this and that. Man, watching this guy for like 12 years now, signed by Sir Alex Ferguson in 2011 from Atletico Madrid, scrawny little kid, and what a legend of the club he has become. And it was that day, I think it was that day. No, it wasn't that day. It was the match after where he overtook the last keeper who had made the most appearances for Manchester United. I think that day he equaled it, 539 appearances. Shortly after, the whole of Manchester United, the team came out. And it's funny, like, you're quite far, but you can tell who's who without looking at their... obviously, they're in the training jerseys at this point. I could tell who's who just from that much of a distance. I could easily spot Sabitzer's little bun. I could find where Marcus Rashford was. Jadon Sancho has that haircut. Victor Lindelof does his little thing with his arm. Like, he raises his arm above his shoulder when he kicks the ball. I could tell, okay, that's Lindelof. I could find Maguire just the way he stood and the way he walked around. I could find Antony. I could find Fred. I could find Eriksen from such a distance. And it was amazing. And you watch them go through the drills, you know, pass around a bit, play the one-touch football thingy, and then do the warm-ups. Just, this is about half an hour before the game. And... then comes out the Aston Villa team. Emi Martinez was right in front of me, like the World Cup winning Argentinian is right there in front of me. And again, Mings and Watkins and Ashley Young and all these chaps from their team were right in front of us. Then they obviously packed everything up, went back inside the tunnel, got dressed, and like 30 minutes later they were out. And then what a feeling. And then the stadium obviously fills up and there's 73,000 people in that stadium that day apparently. They walk out to the Premier League music, and this is what you notice, like the acoustics in the stadium are not very good. The seat where I was at, there was a lot of echo. You couldn't tell what the announcements were. You just couldn't. And then apparently that's because of the construction of United. It's an old stadium. They've not factored in the acoustics as much compared to the newer stadiums which are built, which really factor in all these things. So then the match starts and everybody erupts, and then the chants begin. Obviously, it starts from that corner just above the players' tunnel at Stretford End. We were told during a museum tour, this is where the noisiest, the most passionate fans are. And you'll hear any songs which start during a game start from here, and then it just resonates. And then you could tell, it's like a wave. You hear it happen in front of you, and then like a wave, it comes towards your side, and then everyone's singing it. And truth be told, I don't know all the songs of United. I just know a few and some, I don't know the words. I've heard them, but I've just not looked them up. Hearing 73,000 fans sing United songs at the same time. Oh man, what a feeling it is. It's just something else. And the match itself, not very entertaining. Villa were just not in it. They didn't have a lot of chances and United dominated the possession. Unai Emery on the touchline was losing it. He was livid. I could see it. The goal that was scored by Bruno Fernandes was right in front of us, and the stadium just erupted. It was such a feeling. It was just before halftime, and I was hoping that they would score, because if they score at the other end, it's the end which is further away from me, and I can't, like, you can't tell what happened. They scored right in front of us. Stadium erupted. I erupted. I was sick, mind you, and I was jumping around like a little girl, like fangirling over the whole thing. And it was ecstatic. It was beautiful. What a moment. And then obviously the halftime happened and the thing shifted. And then we had a bit of sloppy passes happening from both sides, but Villa came close a bunch of times. Nothing to it. And then in like the 89th minute, I think somebody had a shot on goal, and Victor Lindelof cleared it off the line in the 89th minute. And I was like, I remember looking at the clock and it was 81, 82, and it was still 1-0. And the possessions were like shifting hands very frequently. And I was like, if they score now, it's going to suck so bad. Coming all this men losing out, like drawing in the last minute, they have to win. And Lindelof, with that clearance, mind you, we didn't have Varane, we didn't have Martinez at that time. Lindelof, the Iceman, with a goal line clearance of a sure short goal. Like, I saw the replays when I came back home. It was in, had he not been there. Headed it out, kept us in the game. Final whistle, 1-0 United. Ecstatic. Loved it. And I was like, surprisingly, the first half went really slowly. The second half just like whizzed past. I was amazed. And like a little, I was filming everything. Like, I didn't care. I did not care. Like, people who know me know that I don't take a lot of pictures, but I was like, screw this. I'm going to do everything. I'm going to record everything. Then the match ended. 1-0 United, 3 points in the bag. Needed that really badly. Then the players come out and they like applaud the sections and whatever. And Casemiro was right in front of us. De Gea towards the second half was right in front of us in the goal. What a feeling, man. And then the match ended and slowly everyone sort of trickled out. I was one of the last ones. I wanted to take it all in. But by the time I got out, and I noticed this, like, people started leaving by the 83rd, 85th minute, because I understood much later why they were doing this. The roads get blocked for miles. Imagine 73,000 people coming out, and it was blocked. Forget about getting cabs. I didn't get a cab at all. My hotel was about 6 miles away, so I said, okay, let me just start walking and then see what happens. And all along, there's just a one giant traffic jam. It just is. And then there are people walking towards the train stations, walking out of the stadium, God knows, going to little shops here and there, trying to get a bite, this and that. It's just people everywhere. And I walked past the Matt Busby way and I took a picture. It's on my Instagram. Just a sea of people wherever you look. It's just full. And yeah, it was amazing. But yeah, I was giddy as hell coming out of that stadium, and I'm glad we won, and I didn't mind the walk. And Manchester was quite pretty. I mean, like, really, you know, tiny houses. I live in Delhi, Gurgaon, you know, you're used to like these high-rise apartment complexes and this, seeing these tiny houses like one after the other lined up in a street. I don't know, very different. And then finally, after walking for like an hour, I reached this street which is slightly secluded. I'm like, let me try here. So I did, and then I finally got a cab, and then the cab basically had to drive 5 minutes to drop me to the hotel, and that was it. And that was United. And the next day I had a train back to Gatwick at the same hotel where I was staying, and the day after I flew back. And that was it. I still can't believe I did that. The memories are very fresh. It's like I can shut my eyes and I can take myself back there. It's just one of those things. And the first thing I did when I came back, I removed that off my dating profile. You know, that bucket list thing, visit Old Trafford, I removed that because now it's done. And over the last few years, I've done a lot of things. I've done bungee jumping, skydiving, scuba diving, road tripping, a lot of things. But the number one thing on my list, was to visit Old Trafford and Manchester United. And I finally did that. And I was... It was a weird sense of accomplishment. Yeah, I felt good. I was like, it does not matter. I didn't mind spending all that money. I didn't mind being sick. I was like, this is all worth it. Obviously, had I not been sick, it would have been a better trip, but I can't help it. Cold weather gets me every time. It is what it is. So, yeah. Any United fan who's listening to this, I would recommend at least once in your life. It's like, what do I call it? I don't want to call it Mecca and offend people, but it is such a, it's got such a, and it's weird, you know, like, our group had 30 people in that museum group, right? Nobody cared where you're from, where you've come from, what you look like, you're tall, you're short, you're whatever, this and that. Nobody cared. In that moment, we were all United fans. And there was a sense of camaraderie, like, okay, we are together. We are this entity. And then it got me thinking, like, two people can find something common between them, and then they're a clan, you know, then why, yeah, it was a very, yeah, you know, why, you know, people can find common ground with anybody, why would you, like, pick one thing that is different about you, and then fixate on that, and then develop hate over a period of time. Yeah, I had a lot of thoughts, I had a lot of time to myself, and those long train rides when you have nothing but endless British countryside, it just gets you a bit philosophical. Train back was nice, a little bit empty. I had the whole seat to myself, two seats, the next the seat adjacent to mine to myself. So I had a nice ride. Got back at London Euston, walked across to London St. Pancras, I think it's called, right next to King's Cross. Took a train to Gatwick Airport, took a cab to my hotel, stayed there. This hotel was nice. Again, I was a bit unwell, so I stuck to staying indoors, cranked up the heat, put the kettle on. And I watched a lot of British TV, a lot of game shows on British TV, a lot of game shows in the sense questions about like general knowledge questions and things like that. You know, like it's a game show, but it's, we used to have that in India, but not anymore. I don't know why. But we have KBC, but yeah. But every channel you go on, there's some game show going on. I was watching one called, oh man, what is it called? Oh, damn it, the name escapes me now. Never mind. So did that all evening. Next day was my flight. Went back home. That was it. But what a trip, man. What a trip. I came back and I thanked the chaps from Dreamset Go for making it happen. And then the guy says, you know what? If you want tickets for other events, we can make that happen too. And I'm like, okay, what are you talking about? He's like, how do you feel about going to watch the Wimbledon? And I was like, oh boy. My visa is still valid. Wimbledon's in June, July, June-ish, July-ish, whatever. And I was like, let me get back to you. So if I do have time, I might just go again and watch Wimbledon. Imagine playing Rafa Nadal at Wimbledon. But anyway, that's a story for another time. Yeah, I just can't tell what it feels like right now. Having come on the other side of doing this. A few years ago, my brother went to Old Trafford for a work thing, and then he went to the Emirates. He's seen his team play live. And that has been the source of the greatest envy for a very long time, that you see your team play live. And now I've done it. Match itself wasn't that great. Not a lot of great performances, but we won. There aren't even any like big names left. What is the biggest name at United right now? Not in terms of money being paid. Big names. Rashford? Sancho? David De Gea? Maybe. But they aren't as big as, let's say, some of the players who've played here. Like Ronaldo was here. Zlatan was here. Some really big, Rooney, Tevez, these big names have played, but who's comparable to those players in this day and age? I can only think of David De Gea in terms of pedigree. But anyway, I will visit again. I have to. I don't think one trip was enough. I will go again. Obviously not the museum tour again, but I will see the match again. Yeah, what a day. So anyway, if you are a United fan, you're planning to go visit Manchester, and if there's a question which I haven't answered, get in touch with me. Look us up on Instagram. We have a handle now. It's called The Two Bros Podcast. Search for us. You'll see the same logo which you see on the podcast app. It's the same logo, and then you can identify us. Give us a follow. Give us a like. Give us a share. You know what to do. And this was episode 96, visiting Old Trafford and Manchester United. I hope you liked it, and I'll see you on the flippity flip. Bye-bye.